It is Wednesday, May 8th, 2024, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Matthew Moore.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Today, a local nonprofit is identifying leaders to combat the housing crisis in Northwest Arkansas.
People that are struggling with, you know, a few hundred dollars increase per month is a lot for them, and so they had some unique stories to tell.
Plus, a musical tour that extends from the University of Arkansas to the southern part of the state.
And so it was a really special thing to be able to go not only with my friends, but also other ensembles and experience sharing that with others.
And an underrated outlet of student media at the University of Arkansas.
I still hear professors that say, oh, I forget that we have a magazine, literally while I'm in the room.
That's all coming up after the latest headlines from NPR.
KUAF is supported by the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, empowering the social mobility of its students and the economic growth of the River Valley since 1928 through educational opportunities and community partnerships. More information at uafs.edu. The Momentary presents a weekend of roots music at Fresh Grass Bentonville, May 17th and 18th. This two-day all-ages festival features world-renowned artists including Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, Trampled by Turtles, Molly Tuttle and Golden Highway, and more. Tickets at themomentary.org.
This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. I'm Matthew Moore. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. Ahead on our show, a conversation with the leadership team behind Hill Magazine, the student media outlet for long-form reporting, poetry, and a place to showcase students' graphic design skills. That's in our second half hour. First, Circles NWA is celebrating the graduation of their second cohort of community members tonight at Genesis Church in Fayetteville. Kyle recently spoke with two of the driving forces behind the nonprofit that is seeking solutions to poverty and a lack of affordable housing.
The last time I spoke with Anna Hurley, the Big View director for Circles NWA, it was right before a community-wide discussion about affordable housing in Northwest Arkansas was going to take place at the Fayetteville Public Library. More than 300 people participated in person or online in that public discussion. The event was led by people who have had firsthand experience with the housing shortage, identified as circle leaders by the organization. And in the audience, Anna Hurley says, were people who can affect policy change.
Also, we had realtors, developers, bankers, people who kind of have a stake in what happens next in the story. So we're really pleased with the diversity of people we had show up.
The founder and executive director of Circles NWA, Christina Williams, says the group wants to enable different perspectives to examine issues such as affordable housing and poverty. She says they flip the conventional model often used to discuss such matters, giving the leader or expert role to people who are experiencing some of the most stress associated with such challenges.
Our program participants who are low income but are working, struggling to make ends meet a lot, especially now that housing is on the rise. And so they have a unique perspective when it comes to housing, being renters, being people that are struggling with, you know, a few hundred dollars increase per month is a lot for them. And so they had some unique stories to tell.
Williams says the discussion earlier this spring at the Fayetteville Library touched on several aspects related to the region's housing. She says the exchange centered on something, she says, developed in Northwest Arkansas over the last several years, an intersection of a lack of availability of affordable housing and a lack of protection for renters in Arkansas.
Intersection there of like this place of extreme stress for our circle leaders, for people like them in the community, and especially how when you don't have those protections, that people are really ripe for being taken advantage of. And so we actually ended up talking a lot about the extreme imbalance in landlord-tenant laws in Arkansas.
Circle NWA's mission includes raising awareness about that imbalance between landlord and tenants in Arkansas law. Public events like the one at the library earlier this spring are one way to move the conversation forward. The 18-month cohort classes, like the one graduating this week, is another. Circle leaders are paired with volunteer allies. The program is designed to increase upward mobility for individuals and families by building relationships across socioeconomic lines. Christina Williams says she stays in touch with participants from the first cohort as they move on to new jobs, complete levels of education, and just importantly, she says, develop as community leaders.
That's something we really emphasize in Circles. They get 18 months of kind of being a leader of their group with their allies, and then we give them opportunities like this housing event to step out and be a community leader. And so to see the growth in that, it's really a key part of our mission. Those who are closest to the problems, we believe, are also closest to the solutions.
The third cohort of leaders and allies already 6 months into their program, and a fourth cohort is scheduled to launch in the fall. Anna Hurley, the Big View director for Circles NWA, says both the work with the cohorts and the one-time events like last month's public conversation about housing can, in tandem, move a region closer to more interest in tackling big issues like affordable housing head-on.
Part of what we did at the library event, when it was ending, everybody had a puzzle piece, and if they were interested in sort of like staying part of this conversation, they could write their name on the puzzle piece. That's actually going to be turned into a piece of artwork by one of our circle leaders that will be on display in the coming months. And that was to symbolize them being part of this community committed. So we're really hoping to build this community who is going to show up not just to learn about the issue, but then when maybe something comes up, maybe there's a new tenants' rights policy that comes up, to show support for that. Maybe there's an opportunity to support affordable housing, zoning changes. So I hope that it really mobilizes the community and that we can see us just as the big NWA community all coming together to sort of see these changes for both the tenants' rights and the affordable housing.
And Executive Director Christina Williams says big topics like housing and poverty have to be approached with a community-wide attentiveness. That's, she says, what was symbolized with handing out those puzzle pieces at the public talk.
Each person has a role to play in this, and it can be small, it can be large, but even just the way we think about the housing crisis, the way we're talking about it to our neighbors, you know, we talked about the idea of NIMBY, not in my backyard, even just like articulating that sentiment can set us back as a community. And so being aware, being willing to collaborate on what are solutions that are good for everyone, not everything that's first proposed is necessarily the best thing for our community. The whole idea that we all have a piece of the puzzle that will be put together to form some, I think, real solutions that can help this community.
Applications for both leaders and volunteer allies for the fourth Circles NWA cohort can be found at circlesnwa.org. Also there, a link to that public discussion about housing. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
A new center from the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences is bringing the clinic to the community. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth attended the opening of the Institute for Community Health Innovation and brings this report.
So where do you service? Where have you gone and what have you done with this?
With this one, we're Rogers and Springdale Samaritan Centers.
What do you do?
We do health screenings.
A health technician walks a string of visitors through a miniature clinic inside of the UAMS Mobile Health Unit. The fully equipped van is just one method of outreach the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences' new Institute for Community Health Innovation is implementing. UAMS's eighth institution is based out of Springdale and had an official opening and ribbon cutting last Tuesday at its location near Don Tyson Parkway and Interstate 49. That afternoon, staff piled out of their offices and into the parking lot along with community partners to tour the space and see some of the services the Institute will provide.
And our units, they have a full exam room in the back and then two screening stations within each unit. So we can do most services. We can do some telehealth on the units. Right now, we've been primarily offering vaccines and preventative health screenings, but we'll be launching women's health services and prenatal care in June.
That's Crystal Langston, Executive Director of Community Programs for UAMS Northwest. Standing outside of the mobile unit, one of four deployed across the state, she says the center's goal is to reach more people across the region that traditional services may be missing out on.
Yeah, the Institute really started here in Northwest Arkansas as the Office of Community Health and Research. And our first primary focus was the Marshallese and Hispanic communities. But one thing that the COVID-19 pandemic really highlighted was the need to focus more broadly.
Across the parking lot, Pearl McElfish ducks under a banner of red and white balloons at the entrance of the building. McElfish is the Institute's director, and she says compared to other states, Arkansas faces significant health gaps like high maternal and infant mortality, high rates of diabetes, heart disease, and obesity. So, she says, UAMS recognized they needed to approach healthcare services differently to get different outcomes.
Not everyone's comfortable going to the doctor. In fact, most people are pretty intimidated or scared by going to the doctor. But people live their lives outside the hospital walls, outside clinic walls. And so we really try to shift everything to going where people are. People are at school. People are at churches. People are at jobs. And so why can't we go where people are and provide health education, access to health care, and other critical components of health right where people live every day? So it's really shifting the paradigm. And rather than saying, everybody come to us, we're really saying, where are you every day? And how can we go to you and make living your healthiest life as easy as it can be?
And how the Institute does that is by offering diabetes screenings and education through partnerships with local churches, nutrition programs through more than 20 school districts, and other direct-to-community programming.
Other partnerships have included the pharmacy network. Every small rural town, they may not have a doctor, but they probably have a pharmacy. And so we've partnered with pharmacies to be able to talk to patients really early, provide things like diabetes self-management, prenatal care. I know I'm saying again, but those are two of the biggest obstacles or challenges in Arkansas.
McElfish added upcoming projects include prenatal screenings in maternal health deserts and a mobile health clinic for workers at local Tyson plants. And although the Institute is based in Northwest Arkansas, they'll have offices and programs spanning the state with more than 170 employees.
We are primarily grant funded. So we have federal grants. We also have local foundation grants. We bring in $20 million in federal funding each year. The economic impact of that is more than $55 million. And so we're bringing jobs to the region and also improving health at the same time.
The Institute is now officially open and awaiting four more of those mobile health units to deploy later this year. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
The Trail Technician Program at Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville is scheduled to begin this fall. And the inaugural director of the Trail Technician Program, Lori Greminger, will start in that role on Monday. She agreed to meet me for a quick conversation about the program and its curriculum on the NWAC campus last week. She says the Trail Technician Program will train people to work in a growing industry that isn't always top of mind for trail users.
You don't think about who creates trails. You're out riding, you're just, you know, enjoying your time in the woods, and you assume there's some tiny little fairy that comes and puts trails on the ground at night while you're sleeping. A trail fairy. And you know, as I kind of grew in the sport of mountain biking, I realized that wasn't the case. You know, volunteerism, stewardship, things like that became really important to me. And then just discovering who it is that puts trails on the ground. How do we get trails? Like, who talks to land managers? Where does the property come from? Just so many questions were spiraling in my mind.
The Trail Technician Program will complement NWAC's Bicycle Assembly and Repair Technician Program that started on campus 3 years ago. Greminger says the Trail Technician course will cover all of the trail chronology, from land and right-of-way acquisition to design of the trail to the physical building of trails. Her resume includes building and maintaining sustainable mountain bike construction for the International Mountain Bicycling Association and, most recently, managing the Kohler Mountain Bike Preserve for the Peel Compton Foundation. She says she thinks students in NWAC's Trail Technician Program probably share some of her love for biking and the outdoors.
I think students that will excel in this program are those that enjoy conservation, that enjoy nature, that are probably mountain bikers by trade or just enjoy trails in general, use trails. For me, I didn't love organized sports. I didn't like to be on a team. I really wanted to rely on myself, and for mountain biking, I could do that. And that's sort of the same with trail building. You're out there in the woods, sometimes by yourself for hours on end. You got to get used to talking to trees and talking to mushrooms and things like that. So people who excel in this program have a passion for cycling. They're not afraid to work independently, and they just really enjoy being outside.
She says her work with the International Mountain Bicycling Association took her to all 50 states, and she's become quite familiar with the trail building companies whose work is in high demand.
Through those 50 states and all of the different jobs that I've worked on, all the different trail building projects, I've worked with the same companies over and over again. Trail building, you know, we see it as this huge international industry, but it really is a small community. There are companies that you see over and over again working in various states. So, yeah, I mean, it's actually a really tight-knit community.
Grimminger says there can also be diplomacy and advocacy involved in the trail building process, explaining to cities, residents, landowners, and other stakeholders why trails are a benefit. There's also geology, math, logic, and art used in creating successful, sustainable trails.
The way that you maintain a trail is first knowing what material you're working with. Is it just regular old dirt? Is it a clay-based dirt? Is there loam in the soil? Is it a very sandy soil? Are there rocks? Once you know what aggregate and what dirt you're working with, then you can kind of start to dissect what type of trail maintenance you need. Are you hardening the surface? Are you putting an extra layer of clay on the surface? Are you recapping it entirely? So maintenance, it's a multifaceted thing. Like, you really have to understand the trail that you're working with so that you can create not a band-aid. You want something that's going to last through rain, through people, through, you know, all the different things that are going to hit the trail. So it is a process, and it's a learning curve.
Lori Grimminger, the inaugural director of the Trail Technician Program at NWAC, says the program will include field work with the surrounding trails, and she hopes that opportunities for internships and apprenticeships will follow. Enrollment for the Northwest Arkansas Community College Trail Technician Program is now open. Classes begin in September. She says class schedules will accommodate different types of schedules. There will be Monday through Friday classes, night classes, weekend classes, and online options as well. More about the program can be found at nwac.edu/trailtech. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. This week, scores of students at the University of Arkansas are going to be given diplomas for their degrees in music. Hundreds of others will earn their degrees in the next few years. Throughout the school year, these students perform. And if you live close enough to campus, you have a chance to catch recitals and performances. But further away, well, those chances are rare. Enter the University of Arkansas Student Chamber Music Tour. This spring, four student chamber music ensembles will perform at Sheridan High School, the Perryville City Park, Ryzen High School, Dallas County Museum, Alma High School, the Hot Spring Malvern County Library, and then, to celebrate the end of the tour, at the Faulkner Performing Arts Center on the U of A campus. It's the second time such a tour has taken place. The first one, in 2021, included performances in Bull Shoals, Berryville, Eureka Springs, and Mountain View. Last week, Katie J. Halbert, assistant professor of horn and graduating senior Abigail Short, came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk with me about this upcoming tour. Abigail, by the way, graduating this week with her degrees in music education, music performance, and music theory. Katie Halbert says she came to the university in 2021 as a visiting assistant professor and immediately knew she wanted to bring something to the music department that was not only a benefit to her students, but students within the entire music department.
I heard very early on about this Music 75 initiative that our department got funding for right before COVID from the Women Giving Circle. And this Music 75 initiative is to bring music or music presentations to all 75 counties of Arkansas. And so I immediately thought to myself, well, what better way to do this than with a chamber music tour? I started immediately with coaching, I think, Abby's quintet. I think you were one of my first groups that I was coaching back at that time. And so I started putting together, you know, how many students I could take, how many groups I could take, where are we going? I didn't even know what the state of Arkansas looked like. And so I'm looking at maps, trying to figure out, like, okay, where haven't we gone yet? And I ended up getting a teaching grant also through the university to fund it. And I got funding that year from the University of Arkansas Band Program as well. And next thing you know, it was 14 students, three student groups and myself going out on tour for 3 days.
So that first tour was 2 years ago.
Yes.
Eureka Springs, about 45 minutes from Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
Bull Shoals in Marion County, which is a couple hours, 2.5 hours. And then on to Mountain View, which is another, I don't know, hour and a half from Bull Shoals.
Mm-hmm.
This year, this time, there are more miles to be had.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so once we got our feet wet and we started going a little bit farther, one thing that I started to notice and realize was that the farther out we went, the more that people were thriving for some sort of experience like this. When we went out to Ozark Folk Center, they said that they had never had a classical group come and perform. And actually, a local band director, his name's Blake Henley, he teaches, I think he actually teaches K through 12, maybe 6 through 12 band in Mountain Home. And he brought band students to that concert, and he was so beside himself excited. Like, my students never get to see live music. He also was the owner and runner of their only duplex movie theater in that town, by the way. Mm-hmm. Moonlights as a movie theater director. And so he let the students, after that performance, go see a midnight showing of the new Doctor Strange movie because he was so thankful. So we had the whole theater to ourselves.
Well, your second concert on that first tour 2 years ago was in Bull Shoals.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up just across the dam in Lakeview. And I can tell you, I lived there from ages 6 to 18. In those 12 years, there was never, ever visiting classical music, let alone any classical music that came to those two little towns.
Yeah, the Bull Shoals one, they was just like the most idyllic of all of the performances in terms of, you know, the new building for their visitor center at the state park. And the way that we were seated, we were literally like feet away from the audience. It was very intimate, and that made it really a wonderful experience for the audience and for the students. And honestly, on that tour, our most well-attended performance was at the Berryville Public Library.
Oh, well, the folks at the Berryville Public Library.
Yeah, they're
good.
Yes. So, you know, they have that like historic little village that's right next to the library. So we did another outdoor concert, mm-hmm. which is something I'll kind of talk about in terms of importance. And the outdoor concert also had a food truck that was coinciding with having ours set up. And so they provided free food to the students, which was really nice. But then we probably had 30 to 40 people just sitting out on lawn chairs, on blankets, dogs, children running around while we were all performing.
It's a throwback to the old community concert.
Absolutely.
I love it. Abigail Shore, let me bring you into this conversation. You were part of the tour
yes.
2 years ago yep. when you were just finishing your sophomore year.
Right.
Tell me about your experiences. What do you remember about going to those towns?
That was the first year that I had been involved in chamber music, which was just the first time I had been involved in chamber music. And so it was a really special thing to be able to go not only with my friends, but also other ensembles and experience sharing that with others. There's not many opportunities you get to do that. I know the band department does the road show to kind of display the U of A's R&B, but mm-hmm. we don't really have that within other areas of music. So it was super cool to see different communities and see how they interact and react to music.
After the concerts, would people come up and talk to the musicians?
For sure.
What were the conversations like?
Some people would just ask where we're from, what we're studying, how we got into music. Some people would ask about what outfit we were wearing. Some of the students that we played for would ask, like, how long we've been playing or what instrument we play on, who we study with, type of stuff like that, how to get involved. So,
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Greenwood, Arkansas.
So that's
Fort
not North. Huge.
No.
Not huge at all. One of the majors that you listed for me before we started recording this conversation was music education.
Right.
So ideally, sooner rather than later, you'll be dealing with students,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I would like to teach at the collegiate level, but also help adapt high school and junior high public education to have more chamber music involvement. So.
And nothing about, because I don't know about high school curriculum mm-hmm. when it comes to music, but is there many opportunities for chamber music performance in high schools?
It's difficult to say. Solo and ensemble is a program that almost all states have, but not all schools participate in it, or they sometimes only do it in some years and not others. Chamber music is, I think, a little bit difficult for the public schools to put together, because when you start to segment the students away mm-hmm. from each other, you know, it's hard to monitor. It's hard to make sure like everyone's like doing what they're supposed to be. I think that's why band directors also really focus on like festival, mm-hmm. Which is exactly. obviously an important part of the curriculum as well. But I think sometimes the chamber music aspect gets a little pushed mm-hmm. to the side.
How do you decide the program?
So that's one of the most important parts about tour. You know, I make sure that the student groups that go have been formed since the fall. That's one of the first things, because I want to make sure that the groups that are going are at extremely high level of musicianship and training. And then the moment the spring semester starts, or even did we start talking about it in the fall?
It was on the radar in the fall. We didn't really start planning specifics as far as program, but
yeah, it is the moment I know which groups are going, I start talking to them about the music that they're taking and making sure that the music is an accessible variety of music. And when I say accessible, I'm not talking about we're not taking like musical medleys and things like that. We're still playing true repertoire for the groups, but that it's repertoire that sounds fun, has good melody, has something that the audience can follow along with. The Wind Quintet is actually playing my favorite portion of the program. They're ending every one of our concerts. Abby, you want to talk about the music you guys are taking?
Sure. When we were selecting our music, we really wanted to make sure there was a variety of style and sound. So we're playing a more classical piece, but then we're also playing sea shanties, which is also a repertoire for our ensemble, but it's more noticeable and recognizable, especially to younger audiences.
Yeah, I mean, sea shanties yeah. came back inexplicably during the pandemic. Yeah.
So for most of our programs, we're starting or ending with a sea shanty, and then we have, like I said, a more classical piece that's more traditional, I guess you could say, and then a piece that's slower, more lyrical, and just a really pretty piece to listen to. So when we were picking which pieces to take or which portions of our pieces to take, we wanted to make sure there was fast or there was like slow, lyrical, pretty, or just like fun, goofy, yeah. upbeat. So.
Yeah, the variety of programs that each of the groups is taking is also really diverse, which I was really excited about. I think our first year, that wasn't so much on the radar as much as I just wanted to make sure like everyone was taking, you know, the music that could be, that's not scary to the audience. This year, I mean, we have female composers, we have black composers, we have music that is sea shanty-esque. We have classical music. We have more modern music, like by Jennifer Higdon. By the saxophone group is always going to be the one that's going to have all that modern stuff. Mm-hmm. Though they actually did surprise me. They have a couple of transcriptions of Florence Price pieces, as well as a couple of like traditional Danish folk tunes. So they actually surprised me a little bit this year.
That's cool, taking Florence Price,
yeah.
Arkansan music, yeah.
And it's arranged actually by one of the students in the quartet too, which makes it even more special.
That's cool.
And then like the brass trio, they're taking these really fantastic set of three pieces called Appalachian Brass, and they're all Appalachian Civil War folk tunes that were arranged by a woman named Alyssa Wright. And it's really a lovely set of three pieces. And so they're taking that on tour, but it's also like they're taking transcriptions of Bach symphonias.
2 years ago, you had Marion County, Carroll County, and Stone County. Where are you going this year?
So we are going to Dallas County, Perry, Hot Spring, and Sheridan. Those are our four. Sheridan's in Grant County, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So the first day is the heaviest day. So we'll leave on Sunday night, May 12th, and it's a travel day. So we'll leave at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We're just going to drive to Pine Bluff, which is our home base for hotel. The very next morning, we immediately are going to Sheridan High School for an 8:30 performance. And then from there, we'll go to the Malvern Hot Spring County Library. And do a performance at 1 o'clock in their children room, and then we'll go on to Fordyce, which I had been mispronouncing for quite a long time, but I figured it out. And we're performing at the Dallas County museum. They call it their annex. It's their larger building. And yeah, and I actually had to laugh because when I was speaking to the woman who is the coordinator for the Dallas County Museum, her son is actually the band director at Sheridan, and I about died because I didn't realize that connection. But of course, that's what's going to start happening.
Oh, welcome to Arkansas, yes.
So then the next day, we'll start off at Risen High School and then go on up. This is a little bit of a long day. We'll have to drive from Risen to Perryville. And we're actually going to do a city park concert there, which is really great. They have this lovely pavilion, a beautiful park. We're also coordinating with a food truck coming to come out from Conway. And that's, you know, again, I just had to call like the city number and just say, hey, can we perform in this park and not get arrested? And they're like, yes, absolutely. We're so excited. And then the very next day, we'll start our way back and we'll stop at Alma Public Schools and do a performance. And then we'll have our final homecoming concert at the Faulkner Performing Arts Center.
Will that be free?
And that's free. All of the performances are free. It's one of the big things when we do this tour that is part of the accessibility factor is that we're playing at places that are, first of all, parts of the community. We're not playing in places that are seemingly inaccessible. The outdoor performances always make me the most excited for that because, you know, someone can just be out there with their kids at the playground and next thing you know, they're coming and listening to some classical music. And then places like the Dallas County Museum, you know, you would never think about having classical music in this little sports annex that they're going to have us in, but it's a staple in that community. And I'm really hoping that, you know, people who would have normally gone there for any other event will just come to this. One of the fun things about the tour is that, and one of the things that I really try to make sure that is part of the student experience with the tour is that there's entrepreneurship as part of it. The student groups all get professional photos taken by a local photographer. Karen Schwartz has been that photographer for us both times. And the groups, I always tell them, like, this is your opportunity to create an identity for your group. And so each group has to have a name, they have to have a biography, and then these photos kind of showcase what it is they want to look like. Because when you're marketing as a musician, image is everything. The wind quintet that Abby played in the first time around has now completely rebranded because the membership has changed. The first year that that we went, the groups were Hawksbill and Apple Blossom and Castalia. Yeah. And so all of the different groups all had very like Arkansas-based names. This year they're all a little bit more quirky. I love your quintet. They're the Rose Quartz Winds, which I just adore. In their picture, you can see they're all wearing pink, which is super cute.
All right, and the Faulkner Performing Arts Center, of course, that's the only one that's really close to us, and it is when?
So it is Wednesday, May 15th, and it starts at 7:30, but we will have a reception before the concert from 6 to 7 that will be in the lobby. And that reception is a great opportunity to meet our students. They'll all be there in order to talk to those who are coming to the concert. It's also honoring our donors. This is something that's really unique to the tour for this year. Our first year, I was able to fund it, as I said, through a grant, through some of the funds from Music 75, and as well from the band program. The reason that it didn't happen last year is because all of a sudden I kind of had to get creative with my funding process. And so I started reaching out to people who had been donating to the university for other musical causes. And next thing you know, we raised $7,000 and we were able to go this year.
Katie J. Halbert is an assistant professor of horn at the University of Arkansas, and Abigail Short is graduating this week from the University of Arkansas with her degrees in music education, music performance, and music theory. And by the way, if you go to some of the U of A commencement activities this weekend, you might hear her playing flute. The 2023 University of Arkansas Student Chamber Music Tour begins early next week. The finale will be Wednesday night, the 15th, at the Faulkner Performing Arts Center on the U of A campus. Our conversation took place in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio late last week.
The University of Arkansas student media covers a lot of, well, media formats. The newspaper, the Arkansas Traveler, has a strong legacy dating back to 1906. Folks in Northwest Arkansas can tune their radio dials to 88.3 to catch KXUA, the student radio station featuring college DJs and their current music obsessions. But one outlet that tends to get undervalued is Hill Magazine, a long-form magazine that produces two physical issues a year. Earlier this month, the editor-in-chief Victoria Hernandez, senior graphic designer Erica Fredericks, and associate editor Lainey Richardson joined me in the Furman Garner Performance Studio to discuss the magazine and the latest issue. Victoria says she finds herself often having the conversation to remind people that the magazine exists as a student media.
I still hear professors that say, oh, I forget that we have a magazine, literally while I'm in the room. But Hill Magazine is long-form content in comparison to The Traveler, and we do online content like The Traveler, but we also do a semester print edition of a magazine that revolves around a theme.
Erica, for someone like you who's a graphic designer, you're thinking about putting together graphics for this sort of stuff. What drew you to wanting to be involved in Hill Mag?
Well, there's something so rewarding about getting to see your work like in print and have it in hand and being able to work alongside people not only from outside of the art department, but also really talented artists and poets and writers is amazing.
Lainey, for you as like the assistant editor, what maybe drew you to being involved in the magazine versus maybe like other media outlets? Did you consider working at other ones?
I did, and I even, you know, applied for those, but I would say that this fit more of what I'm interested in. I really thrive in leadership positions, and so I think being able to help lead the team is honestly what drew me in. And for our online biweekly publications and also this, the print one, and I would say that both of them have different teams but are led by the same people, and it's awesome to see everybody's work pay off.
What does it look like in a pitch meeting, for example, of like, how do you think about, when do you start talking about the stories that are going to come out in the spring edition of the magazine?
So for the spring edition specifically, we went into it with a theme in mind, a South worth saving. So for this edition, we had people pitch over the winter break to start working on it pretty early. And then they just developed the story over the semester.
So a theme is pretty common with the magazine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about why this theme and what sort of ideas grew out of that.
I specifically came up with this theme because I hear a lot of people talking about the way the South is like so far gone and just kind of general stereotypes that fit the area. And so I wanted to tell stories that defy those stereotypes in different ways.
Let's talk a little bit about like the work, maybe Erica, from your end of like, how do you think when you've got a theme to work with, right? How do you begin to think about taking storytelling through artwork, through design, and making it cohesive?
So when approaching like these big topics like a South worth saving, it's a lot of back and forth between me and the editors in seeing how we can like accurately represent the theme. And I think with this edition in specific, we knew that we wanted to draw on classic Southern imagery and Ozark like folk art to inspire the works, but also be very sensitive to the topics that we are talking about. So we specifically chose more vintage inspiration when making this print.
Is that a stretch for you, like creatively?
Oh, it definitely stretched me. I think with each new magazine, I have to sort of reconfigure what I consider the design to be and sort of fit it into the mold that works best for representing the theme on hand.
Lainey, as you know, kind of the person who's maybe like overseeing the different stories and kind of leading them along the way, what does it look like maybe when we think about like a story that started as a pitch? How does that shape? How does that form? What sort of twists and turns do you see from like the original inception of an idea to like the final execution of it?
I would say that's one of the most common roller coasters that we go through, I guess. We have pitch meetings on Mondays, and most people will come in with their ideas, and these are the writers. These are our hired writers. And so they come in with ideas, but also it's a time to collaborate and help them grow on their ideas, or if we have two people with the same idea, we help them find something else. But getting them connected to sources is really important, because there are plenty of people, plenty of sources that don't, you know, necessarily get back to a writer. So just having to figure out the different loopholes to make sure we have credible sources and reliable people to work with.
What does it look like for you to go from, like, this might be a good idea, but let's think about how do we, because I imagine you're struggling with the idea of, like, this is a good idea, but we need it to be a larger scale, or maybe we need to, like, zoom out a little bit on how we're telling this story.
I'd say to think larger, we really work with our faculty advisor, which is Brett Schulte, the chair of the J School. Specifically with this issue, I knew I want it to be South, but, like, South doesn't really encapsulate the theme as well. Same with the last issue, Things Fall Apart. We had tons of different theme ideas for that, and he just wanted something with more impact with it. So that's kind of how we work through that.
Well, let's talk about maybe some of the stories from this edition. What's one that really kind of, like, you feel encapsulates the idea pretty well?
One that I want to talk about specifically is Falling Through the Cracks by Ashton York. It's talking about the ways in which education affects different people in different areas in the South, and how sometimes people of either different gender identities or different, like, learning abilities don't necessarily get the help or assistance or resources that they need specifically in the region.
What's another example of a story? I think, Lainey, you had an idea.
Another favorite of mine is Shame and Silence by Dustin Staggs, and it is the hidden struggles of women battling pelvic pain. That is an incredible story. I believe it started out as just an online content story, and then we realized it would fit so great in our print edition. That's just talking about the religious aspect of women and what they go through, and it brings in a ton of really credible sources that are unlike the other stories.
Vic, as someone who also works at The Traveler, like, how do you see the difference in how a magazine story is written compared to how a newspaper article is written?
Magazine stories definitely have more creative liberties and can stretch a lot longer. So with The Traveler, they have, like, a pretty hard word count of 800. If you go over that, you most likely cut it. I think max they'll go to 1,000. Whereas our base, especially for these stories, is 1,000, where we bring in a lot more details about, like, the scenery, or, like, paint the picture in the lead, things like that.
Let's talk a little bit about the thought process that goes into, like, creating the physical version of a magazine. What sort of thought process goes through the layout? What story goes where? How to kind of make it look as thematic as it does?
So some of the things that Professor Schulte has taught me is having things in, like, the middle, the most impactful, making sure that you have, like, photo captions, things like that, but also that they flow really well. So a lot of the things that we've, like, rearranged is making sure that, like, when you open it, there's two pages talking about the story rather than just one, so it, like, continues on. And then another big thing that's more, like, Erica's wheelhouse is design aspects, such as, like, the color scheme. Like, I was really set on doing primary colors for this one just because they're my favorite colors and it's my last edition. Erica, if you want to talk more about design aspects.
Yeah, of course. So when moving into the design aspects, we have to consider what the spreads will look like, which when you're designing them, you don't necessarily always see, like, how that's going to turn out. But we have to make sure that the text is broken up to keep it visually interesting with images. And then to make things all really cohesive, we keep the same color palette, of course, as Vic was saying, but we also limit, like, the font choices and make sure the headers all are resembling each other throughout the stories.
We look at people like me, who are not college students anymore, and we say, hey, it's cool to have a magazine, but magazines are dead. What do you say to people? You gave a very good, like, visceral reaction there, Erica. Like, what do you say to people, like, when adults come to you in your life and they say, it's cool that you're doing this as a class project, but, like, are you ever going to be able to do this for a living? Like, what do you tell people when they, you know, dismiss the idea that magazines aren't around anymore?
I believe personally that print isn't dead. I can definitely see, like, as we're moving into a digital age, it is so much more convenient to be able to read a magazine online or have a quick news article or hear something on TikTok. But when making the magazine, you just learn to appreciate the physicality of it. And then I think we're seeing a movement back towards physical artifacts that's really going to, I think, increase in the coming years.
That's kind of what I was going to touch on too. I think just because technology exists doesn't mean it erases physical items. Like, we've seen the resurgence of vinyl records and of books more recently with TikTok. There's like book talk. I'm not even on that. But I think the same thing happens for newspapers and magazines. Print is just better.
And I am so excited to take our work and be able to hold it and take it and be able to put it in memories from college and also be able to take the work that we do and take it to a future career. It doesn't necessarily have to be a magazine, but the different aspects of working with a team or design, we can take those and use those in our classes, in other areas of student media, and just in life in general. And I also know that my grandparents want a copy, a physical copy of the book, and so I want to bring one to them, and it's just awesome.
Lainey Richardson, Erica Fredericks, and Victoria Hernandez are on the leadership team for Hill Magazine at the University of Arkansas. You can find a digital copy of that magazine at the link on our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
Hey everybody, this is Dave Smith, host of Ozark Highlands Radio. This week we'll feature Springfield, Missouri-based husband and wife duo, the Creek Rocks, recorded live on our stage. We'll also hear from singer-songwriter and multiple ACMA winner, Grace Stormont, and author Dr. Brooks Blevins profiles Ozark folk artists. That's this week on Ozark Highlands Radio.
Ozark Highlands Radio. Saturday night, beginning at 6. This is Ozarks at Large. It's no secret Bentonville continues to grow and expand. Part of that growth and expansion, very visible right now, construction being done all over the square. This construction will make one section of the square only accessible to pedestrians and cyclists. All that, plus the award-winning farmers market and monthly block parties, provide plenty of opportunities for connections. Ozarks at Large's McKenna Parsons takes us there.
Having fine arts, activities, and establishments like bars, restaurants, coffee shops, and places to commune is extremely important in creating a city with a great quality of life that people want to come visit. Bentonville Square is a hotspot for activities that do just that, including the Farmers Market and First Fridays. There's a lot to be said about the magnitude of these events. The Farmers Market was voted best in the state with 200,000 people attending last year. That is unreal for a town of 55,000. Also, this year's April 1st Friday on the square had a record-breaking turnout. Emma Greathouse has worked on the square for both of these events.
Our April 1st Friday was literally insane. My job was looked like sitting at the information tent, and it was wild. Like, literally people walking by, like, I couldn't see past the tent because everybody was like, it was so full.
Emma says not only have these events opened up a lot of doors as a college student, but have also led to some unexpected friendships.
So there was this woman who came up to talk about like having a booth or something, and I heard that she had an accent. And I was like, oh my gosh, is that a German accent? And I'm majoring in German, and I was like born and raised in Germany, and I always love it when I run into German speakers in the wild because I'm like, this is such a fun surprise. And I met this woman, and I was like, oh my gosh, oh, hello, wie geht es Ihnen? We started speaking in German, talked for like 30 minutes that day, became friends. She like works in the FBI for 10 years, has all these contacts. I'm going to get coffee with her this summer. I'm like so excited.
George Toole is a local photographer. He emphasizes the community these events, like the Farmers Market and First Friday, create.
This past weekend, I went around just doing some street photos, just taking photos of the environment and the people, and every booth that I went to that I wanted to buy something from, I just decided, hey, why not just ask them if they wanted photos? So I went to one stand called Soto Candles, and I was getting a little car air freshener that they have, which actually really great and smell really nice and natural. And I asked the lady, hey, can I take photos of the stand and you in it for your business? And she was ecstatic. She even used the photography on her Instagram as promotional material. And she also told me that if she ever wanted product photography, that she'd reach out to me. So you can also make connections that way by just going up to people and talking to them. While I was walking around, I also got in a 30-minute conversation with another photographer. He invited me to his community that he has. So it's a great place to connect, just talk with people, and to learn, and just to have fun.
So Downtown Bentonville Incorporated is a nonprofit that focuses on enhancing the Bentonville experience. They are behind events like First Friday and the Farmers Market that offer an entry point to come to the square and enjoy a night out, free of cost, whether that's with friends, family, or on a walk with your dog. Chelsea Philgreen is a 4-year resident of Fayetteville. She says that the Bentonville Square has played an integral part of her experience in Northwest Arkansas.
DBI is playing a huge role in raising the quality of life for people who live in Northwest Arkansas. And that's not something to just like skip over. Like that's a big deal. Bentonville, Arkansas offers such a unique experience because we have great jobs. We have Fortune 500 companies here. We have the outdoor recreation scene, but we also have these pieces of community building that are so important. We have events and fine arts and activities and all these things that are a really huge part of the quality of living that we have to offer.
Specifically at Onyx, what a farmer's market or First Friday looks like is insanity.
Leif Sanford is a barista with Onyx Coffee Lab in Bentonville on the square and shares how these events affect business.
It's so cool to watch how we can kind of come around each other and support each other, anticipate one another's needs, and serve coffee and friendship, honestly, to whoever comes in. Typically, the lines out the door are wrapped on the building on it, those days. I know that this past First Friday was a record-breaking First Friday, and I want to see that topped, honestly. Like, it was crazy, but we could do it at Onyx, and so I want to see us go a little harder, get a little more crazy, sling a little more coffee around, and serve the community.
Aaron Nolan, the communications director for Downtown Bentonville Incorporated, says these events really are a community block party and the heartbeat of Bentonville. As they said,
Northwest Arkansas as a whole has so much to offer.
What is there not to like about Bentonville Square?
So whether it be literal produce or music or blacksmithry or craftsmanship or whatever it is, it is all there.
Everybody belongs in Bentonville.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm McKenna Parsons.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, with college graduation looming, some seniors are concerned about what's next after they receive their diploma.
They're not always looking for someone right out of college. They're looking for someone who is experienced in the field to contribute to that growth. So it's tough to be a small fish in a big pond, a pond that is rapidly, rapidly growing.
Graduating from college, pretty tough. But finding a job could be even harder. We'll hear from two graduating seniors at the University of Arkansas tomorrow on Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville. Contributors today included Daniel Carruth and McKenna Parsons.
Matthew produced today's show inside the Bruce and Ann Applegate News Studio 2. A lot about students. You got the NWAC Trail Technician Program coming up. Student media at the University of Arkansas. Student musicians. And some graduating, about to be professional musicians, going on tour under the U of A banner. That time of year.
Absolutely. Do you remember your college graduation?
No. I don't remember. I barely remember anything about the high school graduation.
It was like 104 degrees on my graduation day. And I remember I had like shoulder length hair at the time. and because I had to wear the hat, I couldn't really like put it up in a ponytail or anything. So I just had like this dangling hair. And that was the moment where I thought, maybe I should cut this.
Well, that's part of learning, right? That's
exactly.
Part of getting older. The thing about graduations is they're at the time of year when you're so busy that they just don't make an imprint necessarily on me. I'm going to a few this year.
There you go.
So I'll tell you about them later.
Please do.
You'll be out tomorrow.
Yes.
but I'll be here.
That's good.
Yes, brand new show. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Matthew Moore. Be well.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents The Portal, an immersive art experience by renowned singer Jewel. It features one-of-a-kind 200-piece aerial drone shows, a meditative art walk, chef-crafted dining options, and more. Open now. Tickets at crystalbridges.org. The Scott Family Amazium in Bentonville invites families to create unforgettable memories year-round and explore hands-on experiences for all ages. Tickets and information at amazium.org.